Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB and wherever you get your podcasts. Nate Bucati, along with Carter Augustine, who's got the Pride jersey from a couple years ago, rocking it today, looking good. And Allie Trost, who has decided to give us a different angle of her dwelling today, coming from a different spot. We see the kitchen in the background now, I think, a little bit as well. So
a little peek into studio life when your living room and your kitchen are in the same room.
Well, we've got a busy show for you today. We have an incredible show, actually. We're going to talk with one of the all-time great Sporting Kansas City / Wizards players. Davey Arno is going to join us for a specific reason, because coming up on Thursday night, we are going to re-air the Sporting Kansas City versus Manchester United friendly that took place on July 25th of 2010. If you know, you know. If you're a Sporting KC Wizards fan, you know how significant that moment was in the arc of the franchise's history. Davey Arno was a central character in that game, and I've talked to him about it before, so I know he's got some great stories to tell. You're going to want to hear those, and we might even play a little show and tell. Davey might have some artifacts to show us that, just to let you know, we taped that interview with Davey before we're running this right now. So I happen to find out that he has some incredible artifacts he's going to show us. So you want to stay tuned and listen to that. That's coming up. So to that note, I'm going to run down the list of the programming we've got coming up for the week through all the different Sporting KC social media channels and all of that. By the way, if you haven't watched the Benny Failhaber trivia game that he unveiled this earlier this week, he did the trivia this time with Graham Zusi, Matt Beisler, and Tim Melia. Watch it. Just watch. It's fun. It's hilarious. It's a good time, good content. So I'm going to be looking forward to every time that rolls out. You'll enjoy that. Of course, tomorrow, Carter Augustine, we're putting out something called For the Cheers with Paulo Nagamura. How about that little feature that's coming up tomorrow at sportingkc.com?
It was awesome. We did the first one with Jimmy Nielsen, which I feel bad for some people at Sporting, because I was given no direction. And in the end, they wanted a 10 to 15 minute video. And I did almost an hour interview with Jimmy Nielsen. So learned from my mistakes. But it's a nice, it's a really good interview with Paulo. He was awesome. Hopefully you tune in for that, because Paulo, really, really great interview.
I mean, another one of the all-time greats, and we still get to see him here in Kansas City. Some of us get our butts kicked by him in the over 30 league when he decides to go ahead and unleash his professional soccer player skills on the rest of us plebeians. But by the way, that's my product placement for you there, Carter, as your For the Cheers is presented by Michelob Ultra, that you can watch it. So I encourage everybody, if you haven't seen the Jimmy Nielsen one that Carter did, go back and watch that. But also the Paulo Nagamura one coming out tomorrow, which is Wednesday, as we're taping this show today. Thursday night, as I mentioned, 7 o'clock, Sporting KC Classics on SportingKC.com. The Wizards versus Manchester United. If you haven't watched that one, you've got to watch it. I mean, this is, to me, one of the top 10, maybe top 5 moments in franchise history. And that's saying something for a franchise that's won as many trophies as they have. But that, and for a friendly, it sounds crazy, but just trust me, it was that big of a deal, and it's an incredible game to watch. So go back and watch it. And if you're like us and you've already watched it, go watch it again. I can't wait to watch that again. And then on Saturday at 7 o'clock, we're going to re-air Sporting Kansas City versus the San Jose Earthquakes from September 15th of 2018. Another one of those great games from the team that finished first place in the Western Conference. Now, that's not going to be with a second screen. We're going to get back to doing those here again pretty soon. We've got a lot of great games, including some Open Cup games in the works for those second screen viewing experiences going forward. And then on Sunday, guys, I'm going to admit this, because this is the first time I've actually sat down to watch it. I should be ashamed to admit that, but the EMLS finals on the 17th are coming up. But on this Sunday, the eSporting game is going to be to be determined in terms of who the competitors are. But this past weekend, Juan Cusain and Alexander got a clean sweep. They have yet to give up a goal in this tournament. And I watched it. They rebroadcast it again this week on FS2. And Stu Holden doing the play-by-play, I thoroughly enjoyed. I actually thought it was quite entertaining and a lot of fun. So make sure you keep an eye on that, because I think we might have the best MLS player who doubles as an EMLS player in Juan Cusain. He's pretty incredible.
Good player. I did a few FIFA streams with him and some of the other guys last fall, and they were all kind of pointed to him as a cut above. So good to see him out there representing pretty well so far.
Hey, we might as well go win another trophy, you know, while we're at it here. So, yeah, if you get a chance, that's being televised on FS1. So that's kind of laying out what's coming up. A couple of bits in new – go ahead.
Something that we just recently started doing, I'm joining the Final Whistle show this season, and because we haven't had any games, we decided, well, why not do a post-game show for the re-airings of the throwback games? So you can actually catch the Final Whistle show this Thursday after – the Sporting and the game is aired then on sportingkc.com. We will have a Final Whistle show airing online and on the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page, so you can go there and check it out, and we will break down the game, talk all the fun stuff with the Sporting Manchester United or Wizards Manchester United game.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Thank you for bringing that up, Allie. I'm sorry I forgot to mention that. Now let's get to some news and notes, guys, around the world of soccer before we take a break for our Davey Arnault interview. One I think really interesting, and then one that's maybe a little depressing. The news that came out today, it was announced in France that they have gone ahead and canceled the Ligue 1 and Ligue 2. I'm terrible at trying to say numbers in French. So, deux have been canceled for the year. And look, they're saying basically they're not going to be – allowing sports to be played even behind closed doors through September in France. And so, and we know some other leagues are starting to hear some rumors about that as well, but that's one of those first dominoes to drop in this regard. And it's obviously not one that any of us wanted to hear.
No, that's like you said, pretty depressing news, and we'll see which countries and leagues follow suit.
I think this thing's just going to continue to unfold across the world in different stages and different phases. And we don't know how that means things will affect us here in Kansas City or in MLS. Of course, the schedule's very different than it is over in Europe. That's one of the things we've talked about a lot. So hopefully that's a positive for MLS, that we're just at the start of the season, so there's more time to try to work through some things to get things going there. And to that end, one of the things that IFAB has put on the table, and the last I've seen of it anyways, guys, was that it's scheduled to be fast-tracked, not official yet, but the idea of adding a couple of substitutions to the game, at least temporarily, if and when leagues start getting back to playing, there is the assumption that there's going to be a lot of matches in a short period of time. We've talked about that in MLS, however many games that they can get a full season in or whatever it is, they're going to have to squeeze as many games into a small window as possible. So they've added, or they're talking about adding, two substitutions. Now, you could still only actually have three opportunities to put subs in a game in addition to halftime, because they don't want it to become a thing where you're making a substitution, 30 seconds later you make another one to try to kill some time and all of that. Some people wonder if this could be the type of rule that then carries on after the pandemic is over. I'll start with you, Carter. What's your reaction to this idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great idea from FIFA, which you don't always often say. So credit to them, and they've put it to IFAB. Hopefully IFAB ratifies it, because I think it will help the players out immensely just with such a condensed schedule. You make five subs, you'd see a couple double subs probably in the second half, but I just think it'll help the players, you know, not run their legs off. And in the end, that leads to a better product as well. I'm curious if it means a bigger bench. I think I've seen some discussion, maybe extending the bench a little bit to accommodate as well. I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, as we heard from Peter Vermees about what's going to happen when players do return, they anticipate it'll take anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks for players to even get back to being 90 minutes fit, given just kind of unusual times that everyone is living in, especially with these players having gone through an entire off-season training program, then to start off that season at like the highest level of competition possible, and then to have to retreat back into what's similar to an off-season type environment while still trying to maintain that level of fitness. So it makes sense that, you know, when players return, it's going to be harder to get back to that 90-minute game fitness. So to have a rule like this implemented, I think will help immensely. But I don't know if I'm as big of a fan of having that carry on into future games, just because having the three sub limit, it's something that some teams can handle and some teams can't. And I think that that's a good test with fitness. It helps kind of keep that competitiveness up. So I don't know if I'm a fan of having it continue on. Maybe extending the bench I'd be a fan of, but I think for the time being, for this season and how unusual it is, I think it's a good call.
Yeah, the only reason that I could see it being a good move going forward personally is the workload that the players are expected to take on in today's game. There's very little off season. When you look at a lot of the big leagues in the world, they play such a long season. They play on so many different competitive fronts. And then they're asked to go travel halfway across the world and play in friendlies all over a continent, be it in China, be it in the United States. And it just seems like they never back off. It seems like, you know, we only add to our schedules in life. And I feel like the soccer schedule has been that way for players for a long time. Look, my personal preference would be that they maybe just back off the schedule load a little bit on players through the course of the year. I think that would be the better thing. But let's be honest, when was the last time anybody walked away from money that was on the table in professional athletics? And after this whole thing's over, I mean, as much money as every sport is looking to lose right now, I don't think that's a realistic thing. If there's a way to mitigate that a little bit through load management, I know it changes the game some. I'm not sitting here saying it's a great thing, but I can actually understand, particularly from the player's standpoint, if it means I get to watch a really great player for maybe a couple more years of his career as well. I don't know if it does or not, by the way. I'm not saying that it does, but if it does, that might be a trade-off I'm willing to make. What do you guys think of that part of the equation?
Yeah, there's definitely some credence there, I think, to, like you said, the long schedules and, that these players go through. But I do agree with Ali. It takes a little bit of, first of all, the advantage of being fit and being able to go 90 minutes is a great part of soccer. And that's why you see a lot of – I mean, we're talking about Manchester United. They were so good late in games during Sir Alex Ferguson's time. And I actually – I've been watching a lot of interviews, and – one that I watched was Gary Neville talking to Steven Gerrard, and he said the big reason for that back in the 90s was they were the first team in England to really professionalize themselves, kind of like you heard Arsenal and Arsene Wenger bring in a lot of the sports science. Well, at the same time, the Manchester United team, they weren't drinking, they weren't partying before games, they weren't going out. They were really maybe not the sports science that Arsene Wenger brought in, but they were the first to stop the partying that was synonymous with soccer at the time. And as a result, they got a lot of late victories, and everyone called it Fergie time, and Neville was crediting their fitness. And it's a part of the game that is, I think, really special, the ability for teams to stay fit. And then the other aspect is the tactics of a coach making substitutions. And this is, it will be a little bit of a crutch for some coaches that maybe aren't as good at that part of the game. It would change it a little bit. So I don't know. You want to help out the players, and I'm curious to see how long will this affect the congestion of schedules that we already had, like you said, Nate. So there's a lot on both sides, but I think I'd like to eventually see it go back to three subs, hopefully. But for the time being, I'm with Ali. I think at least up through next season, it'll be a good temporary measure.
Yeah, and maybe there's a solution in terms of, because I agree with you, when it comes to player longevity, soccer players definitely are hurt in the sense. I mean, there's a reason that soccer players, when they hit, you know, early 30s, a lot of times, again, depending on other factors, injury history, genetics, even how long a player has to last in their career. But compared to other sports, I feel like you see soccer players kind of starting to age at age 32, 33 years old in season. I mean, maybe there's a way during some of those extra games, those congested, U.S. Open Cup, maybe a part of the U.S. Open Cup is that they do add, you know, a fourth or a fifth sub. I'm not really sure what the answer is, but I think for the – if we're looking at the game going forward, I don't know if adding those two subs would help or hurt. I think it would honestly hurt some of the better teams that do separate themselves by being the most fit and by being 90 minutes ready to play. And maybe it actually helps teams that aren't, preparing in that way.
Certainly a lot of consequences might reward teams that have better depth on their bench as well. I don't know. We'll see. But certainly, hopefully we get to see it put into practice at some point here this season. We'll go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Davey Arnaud. You're going to want to hear this interview with one of the all-time Sporting Kansas City greats. And that'll be right after this as we continue with the Sporting Kansas City show. Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts and wherever you stream your video content these days. If you go to the Sporting Kansas City social media pages, sportingkc.com, Sports Radio 810 WHB.com, you can find us in any of those outlets. So however you prefer to consume your content, we're here for you. And Carter Augustine and Allie Trost, as always, now joined by one of the Sporting Kansas City legends, and you have to say Sporting Kansas City / Wizards legends, because yeah, he was there through the transition from Wizards to SKC, and in particular, one of the most monumental moments to me in club history as well that we're going to talk about. But Davey Arnaud, he really needs no introduction. If you're a Sporting Kansas City fan, you know him well. Davey, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
What's going on, Nate? Thanks for having me, man. Good to see everybody. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
So first of all, before we get into, walking down memory lane and all that, the last time we saw you was as the interim head coach of the Houston Dynamo. Tell us what you're up to now and maybe fill in the fans on what's new in the Arnaud world. Where are you coming from right now and what's going on in your world?
Yeah, I'm at my house in Houston right now. We're obviously pretty much locked down like the rest of the country, and spending a lot of time with my kids and my wife, and being part-time school teacher and PE teacher and all the above. So I'm currently here in Houston and have been here since the season ended last year.
So guys, go ahead, Carter.
I was just gonna say, you guys binge watching anything? We have to ask. It's like the standard question we're asking everyone during these times.
Yeah, we did Ozark. Amazing show. We love that show. We were trying to stretch it out over like a longer time period, but we couldn't. It was like back to back. You know what I mean? Like everybody else probably. We did that. We did Peaky Blinders. We finished that. It's a great show. I'm trying to think what else. I can't remember. We've been watching Outlander. I don't know if y'all heard of that before. I'm like 7 or 8 episodes into it and struggling a little bit, to be honest with you, but I'm going to give it a few more episodes and see. But yeah, we've been watching a fair amount of Netflix for sure.
Well, you've got nothing but time. So you talked about homeschooling the kids right now. What's your favorite and least favorite, I guess, subject to have to sit down with them and work on?
Yeah. What's my favorite? I like, they're both, they have a reading segment that they have to do. So when I was in school, I enjoyed English. I like reading and writing. And so I like to get to do that with them. The math part, it's okay with my son. He's 8. So I got no problem with helping him do that. When my daughter gets into some of the math stuff, I got to sit down and look at the lesson first a little bit just to make sure that I'm helping her do the right thing. But to be honest with you, she's a pretty smart little girl, so she doesn't have too many questions. But when she needs the help, I prefer if it's with the reading stuff and not so much the math.
Hey, yeah, first of all, I was terrible at math anyway, but they do it. Everything's different now in terms of, at least for our kids, the way that they're taught to figure out problems and stuff. And so I've actually never been more happy that Google exists than I am, because I have to, like, if my son will have some math fact term that I've never heard of before, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to have to go ahead and look that up and see if I can teach myself.
It's interesting. It's so different the way they're learning. And actually, in fairness, with math, with adding stuff in my head and like numbers in my head, I'm pretty good at. But as soon as she starts to have to put stuff down on paper and the way they're working it out, I don't know how they're getting there. They're getting to the same answer, but I'm not sure how.
Yeah. So before we get into to going back on the, you know, like I said, the walk down memory lane, I mentioned that we saw you last year with the interim job at Houston. Look, that's a tough gig. I mean, I think anybody would tell you that being an interim coach usually is it's brought on you because you're in a tough situation already. And then, you know, that's your first taste of being a head coach at the MLS level and all that. I'm just curious what your takeaway was from that whole experience, and maybe what was good about it, what you grew from, but also maybe what stunk about it, what you didn't like, and just your thoughts overall on how different of a situation that was than anything maybe you've ever done before.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't say that I couldn't find anything negative about it, right? Wow. I think the only maybe negative thing I could say about it is that I didn't end up getting the full-time job. I mean, that would be the only negative for me. I mean, even though, look, the way that it happened, and we were obviously in a tough way, and I was asked to take over. And once that happened, everything that happened between that point and the point where I knew that I wasn't going to get the job, I took everything as a complete positive. Even the tough games. We had a game in Dallas that didn't go well at all. We really didn't perform well. And I'd say that was a really tough moment. But again, I wouldn't say a negative one for me personally, because I learned even more about myself as a coach in that moment, how I would react after the game, what needed to be said, how you talk to the players and lift the group after. I mean, I don't want to sound like everything was sunshine all the time, but that's the way that I approached it, that I knew that it could be only for the last 8 games of the year. And I was going to take every single moment that I could personally for my development as a coach. To try and learn from it. And I'm looking back on it, I'm really happy with the effort that everybody made. I'm really happy with the connection that I had with the players, the staff had with the players, the way that they responded to what we were trying to do. I mean, it was everything that I hoped that it could be and then some. And for me, there's no better indication of how you've done. Not only results aside, but when you look at the players and you talk to the players and you see how they respond every single day, for me, that made me really happy. And I was able to learn in a short span of time, I was able to learn so much and have a real understanding and appreciation of what it means to be a head coach, because it's not the same thing as being an assistant coach. I mean, it is ramped up 10 times. It just is. And so now, for whatever is next for me moving forward, whether that's an assistant or a head coaching role, you know, if I am in an assistant role, I think it better helps me understand exactly what the head coach is going through and helps me to do even better in that role, if that's my role.
Did you always – go ahead, Al.
Who are some of your – I guess, mentors during that process?
Yeah, I mean, I reached out to several different people. You know, I reached out to Ben Olson, who I played with, played under in D.C. I had a lot of conversations with Josh Wolf, who, you know, when I was a player, he kind of took me under his wing and really taught me what it meant to be a real player. And so I bounced a lot of ideas off of him. Because he had been coaching for a long time and obviously had a lot of success in his role. I reached out to my college coach to ask him questions, Butch Laufer at West Texas A&M, another coach who I learned a ton from. You know, when we played Kansas City, so we came down there to play Kansas City. And after the game, I had a great conversation with Peter. And Peter's somebody who I admire. I've always admired. I love playing under. I think it speaks for itself, the job that he's done there in Kansas City. So that's somebody who I had a real conversation with, and who gave me some really good pointers and just made me think about a few things in a little bit of a different way. That's just a few. There was other people that I obviously leaned on, but I would say those guys really had a big influence on what I was, you know, trying to do for that last part of the year.
Did you always think you were going to go into coaching? When did that kind of come about? Were you thinking about it as a player? I'm just kind of curious how you got into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you start to get towards the end of your career, I think naturally everyone starts to think about what you're going to do next. And to be honest with you, I couldn't really see myself doing anything else. I love this league. I love this game. And for me, I love the day-to-day. I love being in the locker room. The idea, when I was playing, the thing that scared me the most about not playing was not being able to compete and be under pressure at a high level every single week. I couldn't see myself living a life where that didn't exist. And the only way that you can be a part of something like that, for me, is to go into coaching. And, you know, as a player, I felt like as I moved on and I became captains of teams and as I was more the veteran player, I really enjoyed sort of taking young guys under my wing a little bit and helping other guys grow and learn, because I think that's important. I think every team needs that. And I just felt very comfortable in that role. And I think that then led to a natural transition to wanting to coach. And it's not the same. You're not a player anymore. It's obviously not the same, but you get to have a big impact on a lot of people, and you get to be a leader and help guys develop and grow into what they dream of being, you know, a professional soccer player for a long time, who's hopefully part of a successful club. And that's what I want to do.
Well, that's certainly what you were. We're talking again with Davey Arno, who is one of the all-time greats for Sporting Kansas City and for the Wizards. And so let's go ahead and do that now, where we go back and relive some memories. And this is the 25th, or we hope we get back to the 25th anniversary of the league here in a little bit, once this pandemic hopefully moves on. And so it's been a lot of reflecting on the growth of the league and all that. And I'm going to bring up a story, Davey. I don't know if you remember this at all. I remember that I was always a soccer fan, but it was the 2006 World Cup when I really the light went off for me that this is my favorite sport and I want to immerse myself in this as much as possible. And I started talking a lot more about soccer on the radio at Sports Radio 810. And the next thing you know, the Wizards were trying to promote the game a little bit more and see if they could, you know, generate a little more excitement. So they had a watch party at the 810 zone for the UEFA Champions League final. And it was you, and I want to say Jack Jewsbury, maybe. Was it Jack with us? And we hosted a watch party at the 810 zone. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think, was it the one out south?
Yeah.
I remember, yeah.
Which was no longer there. Yeah. And we had a few tables. What's that?
It's gone. It's not there anymore.
Yeah, it's not there anymore. Okay. Yeah, it's been gone for a while now. It's crazy to me to think about how long ago that was. But we had a few tables full of fans there, and it was a decent little turnout. And I remember that was like one of the first times I really got to sit there and actually hang out with you and watch a game for a while. But to see like how much we wanted people to like, we were trying to tell people what that competition was at the time. You know, now to like see the types of crowds that you do around the league and the teams and the Atlanta Uniteds and LAFCs of the world and all that are coming in. I mean, it's a question you probably get all the time, but what are your thoughts? Just what goes through your mind when you think back to those days when we were trying so hard to get people to pay attention to where you are now?
It's incredible. And I think we've all seen it if you've been around or known the league for long enough. And like you said, that you're right. People were pretty clueless as to what the game was, or, you know, it just wasn't as visible as obviously as it is now. But man, the growth of this league, and for me, especially in Kansas City, to see what it was as the Wizards back in the earlier days to what it is now as Sporting Kansas City and what it's turned into, it's phenomenal. Honestly, it's incredible. I've said it before, and I've probably said it to you before. If someone had told me back in those days, and say, let's say 2006, that they're going to take the Kansas City Wizards, right? They're going to build a training facility at Swope Park, which we didn't have at the time, I don't think at that time, but before Swope Park, someone's going to buy the team. They're going to build a training facility out at Swope. They're going to build a brand new stadium that's going to sell out every single game. I would have thought you were crazy. I mean, I really would have. I would have said there's no chance of that happening. But I was very wrong, because even when it did happen, I was still not sure how it was going to work or what it was going to look like. But, you know, to see, you know, to have somebody believe in the sport, in the city there especially, and to see what it is now, is it's rewarding for me to get to be a little piece of that, you know, to having been a little part of that journey. And, you know, it's not only Kansas City, obviously it's around the league now. I don't need to talk about how incredible the league is now and how much it's grown. But yeah, 2006, I couldn't have pictured what it is today for sure.
So one of those moments, I think all of us that lived through it would agree, is the one that we're going to be airing on sportingkc.com on Thursday, which was the exhibition game against Manchester United. It blows my mind to think that that was 10 years ago. Yeah. Let's just have some fun talking about this day. Yeah. Because look, now we see it a lot. We see big clubs from Europe come over here and play games. But at that time, Manchester United was the big club that people even in the United States traveled en masse to go watch. Yeah. And you guys were not Sporting Kansas City yet. No. You had a lot of those players, but you weren't Sporting Kansas City yet. And no. I'll never forget being in that stadium and the result and all that. But for you, what did you think? Let's start with going into the game, like the weeks leading up to it. Did it feel to you guys like as big of a deal as we now know that it was? Were you like, oh my God, we're going to play Manchester United? Did you think there was going to be a huge crowd? Like what did you think? What were your expectations of that moment?
Yeah. Once we found out, the anticipation as players was huge. I mean, that, like you said, it's still Manchester United, but back then it was United. We're talking about, you know, the biggest club in the world. And to know that we were going to come to Kansas City as players, we were excited about the game. I would lie if I said we weren't nervous about the game, because we might not have talked about it, but I know I was, and I guarantee everybody else was. And the whole build-up to the game, we heard that there was going to be a big crowd, and so there was so much excitement going into it. It's a funny story. It might have been the day before the game or 2 days before the game, there was a press conference at one of the hotels in Kansas City. So it was myself and Peter, and then it was Sir Alex and Edwin van der Sar, the goalkeeper. So it was us four. So we were sat up on the podium type thing. And I go to walk up there, and I kind of look down, and I'm like, that's Alex Ferguson, like right there. You know what I mean? Like, it was so surreal, the whole, and I don't, you know, you don't normally get like that, but that's different. So there's Sir Alex Ferguson there with I think he had a plate of barbecue in front of him for some reason. Like it was, you know, someone had given him some bar. Anyway, so the press conference gets done and they walk off. Alex Ferguson, they go to leave. And I'm going to leave. My wife's there and my sister's there with me. They're there for the press conference. And my sister's all giddy. She lives in England, so she obviously knows a little more who Alex Ferguson. My wife knows who he is, but my sister, I think, realizes how big of a deal he is a little more. So they're all laughing and they're giddy, and I'm like, what's up? And I said, well, we just took a picture with Alex Ferguson. I said, no way, was he nice? And they were like, he was super nice. But my wife said that they initially asked him for a picture, and he turned around and he said no and went to walk off, like dead serious. He said he took two steps and he turned around. And he had a big smile on his face. He was like, of course, I'll take a picture. Come on. It was like a, you know what I mean? Like a superhuman, like normal moment. And I just couldn't believe it, because sitting down the end of the table, he seemed like, you know, he was different. I know he's just a man, but he seemed different. But I think that helped put my nerves at ease a little bit, just to, you know, these are regular dudes like us, and they're good people. So the whole anticipation leading up to the game was huge, and I thought that was a cool little story. And we still have the picture, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah.
Davey, I want to talk about the crowd for a second, because this was the largest turnout that a soccer game had ever seen in Kansas City, over 60,000 fans, but most of them wearing red, supporting the other team, because at the time, not a lot of people really were as invested in Major League Soccer, for one, and then two, in the Kansas City Wizards. What was it like walking out of the tunnel at Arrowhead, or walking out of the locker room and walking into an environment where you didn't really have 100% home team support?
Yeah, we didn't have anywhere close to 100%. That's one thing I do remember. I mean, I knew there was going to be Manchester United fans, but I didn't realize the extent of it. I didn't realize that you were going to notice probably more red than blue in the stands. But
doesn't help that the seats are red either.
I was going to say that the seats are red as well, but there weren't a ton of empty seats. It was pretty full. But no, honestly, getting to walk out, that's one of my highlights. Being there, getting to walk out, lead the team out there next to Ryan Giggs, who I think was the captain that day, if I'm not mistaken. It was a special moment. And I mean, what a great feeling, you know, for me, but for all the players. And I think for the fans that we did have in Kansas City, who knew who the Kansas City Wizards were, what a special moment. And I hope the game lived up to the anticipation of it, which I think it did. I really do think it did. It was obviously a phenomenal result.
Yeah, it definitely did. And the result speaks for itself. And a lot of people have credited it as such a huge event, as Nate said, for this club. What do you remember about the game out on the pitch after you walk out during the actual game itself?
Well, I would tell you that I don't remember a lot from the game, and that would have been the truth. But I'll be honest, once the quarantine started, you know, then you go through times where you don't have a lot to do. So I said, you know what, I'm going to see if I can find that game. I've never watched the game since it happened. I've only seen highlights. So I got on YouTube and actually pulled up the game and got to watch the whole game for the first time. This was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago now since we played the game. It's not quite as I remember it. And in fact, like leading up to Jimmy Conrad's red card, I was like, wow, we were playing well. You know, it didn't look like you would have thought it would look like before the game started. We were doing well. We had moments we were on top of the game and it was exciting. We had chances. Ryan Smith missed a huge chance to put us up 2-0, like a huge chance. So I just remember that it was, you know, once the game started, it was just like another normal game. You know, it was, you would approach it the same way. And I'm glad that I went back and watched it, because it made you know, the result in soccer, you can play really poorly and win the game, but I thought we played well enough and obviously won the game, which was the icing on the cake.
What about the red card? You don't see a lot of red cards in friendlies.
Yeah. It's 100% a red card, like 100% a red card, but it should not have been a red card that day. Like, you know, just giving a yellow. And Harry Vaughn was the referee. And I actually, when I went back and watched, and I do remember, and I shouldn't have, but I went up and my reaction, I saw him going for the red card and I grabbed his arm like, no, please, like, don't, we know you're right, it's a red card, but please don't do this. And he was just saying, I have no choice. And I was like, Terry, you're killing it. There's 50, 60,000 here and you're just killing it. But 100% it's a red card. So he did what he had to do, I guess. But it makes for an even better story. And Jimmy might tell you that he got a piece of the ball. No chance. He didn't.
What has your conversation been like with Jimmy Conrad? What does he have to say about that moment? Or do you remember, like, in that, like, how did the mindset for the Wizards shift? You know, you go down a player and you're playing in what's at the time probably one of the biggest games, maybe not, you know, on paper, because it, you know, doesn't really mean as much, but like just the biggest game ever. How does the mindset shift after a moment like that?
Well, not only did he get the red card, but obviously it's the penalty kick as well, and he scores to make it 1-1. So, you know, I think for me, if Kai doesn't score, I think we scored 2 or 3 minutes later. I think if Kai doesn't score right there, if we don't get the second goal and it just starts, the pressure piles on, I think it could be a few more. You know, I think we probably don't end up winning the game. I think the timing of the goal was huge. It gave us something now to grab onto again and kind of rally around again and say, okay, we know we're not going to have a lot of the ball, but we can absolutely defend as much as we need to and hang on to a lead, which we ended up doing. We ended up having a few more chances as well. You know, Jack's shot to the far post, Jack Dewsbury, was a great hit. But man, it was such a cool, and you could see, you could tell at the end of the game, it was such a cool feeling when that final whistle blew, and getting, you know, Matt Beisler in the game, Graham Zusi coming in the game, Chance Myers coming in the game. Obviously, Rogers started the game, but it's been there for a long time. Sort of younger guys playing a bigger role as well. I really do think that it did so much, not only for our team, but I think for the city as a whole and for soccer as a whole in Kansas City. When you have that many people in the crowd and people who maybe haven't heard of the Wizards or maybe have but didn't want to give them a chance, it just – it made people open their eyes. And now you put that on top of us opening the stadium the next year, it was like the perfect storm of – a situation, and I think it had a huge impact on the success of opening the stadium and moving forward. I really do.
Okay, so I haven't gone back and watched the game either, and I'm going to do it for the first time on Thursday, but I'm just going to go ahead and fess up that day I was in the fifth row at probably what would have been about like the 30-yard line on the opposite side of the field to where the penalty was.
With a Ryan Giggs shirt on?
Yeah, no, I'm an Arsenal fan, David.
Okay. Oh, I knew that.
I had no problems rooting against Manchester United that day. I actually was wearing a Celtic jersey, which I'm a little embarrassed of, just because I should have been wearing a Wizards jersey, you know, there. And I was not doing the Sporting games or the Wizards games at the time. I was just a fan. And I aired that ref out the whole game after that penalty. I mean, we were in the fifth row, and every time he ran by us, I was screaming, "That's a friendly! It's a friendly! You're terrible!" And I didn't let up after Kai scored. I was like, "They let you off the hook! You're stared!" Because I was convinced, like you, that he had ruined the game, and he had, like, this moment. I'd been spent like the whole week talking on the radio about what a big moment this was going to be, and the team's up 1-0. Dude, Ryan Smith was a stud.
Ryan Smith was phenomenal. I mean, when you wait till you watch it back, I mean, he was so good in that game. I think you saw in that game, you saw, you know, what Ryan Smith, barring the injuries and everything else, what he had the potential to be. I mean, he was fantastic.
Who are the brothers? Was it Raphael? Who are the brothers that he just
Raphael hurt? And yeah, he tore it. He tore him up that game. He really did. It was a good little battle, and he got the best of it. He really did. But yeah, I feel bad for Terry Vaughn, because I know people were giving him. I know people were giving it to him, and I don't think we didn't have an argument about the red card. We didn't want him to give the red card. But according, he said FIFA tells him, friendly or not, he has to do it, and you know.
He probably gets judged on that, you know? I mean,
exactly.
I look back on it and I feel bad about all the stuff I was yelling at him, but because like you said, they're held accountable for the job they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was tough. We just wanted him to maybe one time let it slide, but he did what he had. Listen, referees' jobs are so tough, and the more you're in this, and I will say that, the more you're in it and the older you get and the more you're around it, you see how hard the job is for referees and stuff, so I don't fault him at all. And I don't fault the referee in 2004 missing the handball. A little bit I might fault him, but it is what it is.
I'm faulting him 100%.
We'll remember those moments where a ref screwed our team over.
It's not easy. It's not easy.
We probably should be like
– I'll never forget it.
Yeah, we should probably save our anger for when they miss the call, though, instead of when they, you know,
get it right. You're right. He was right.
Like you said, Davey, though, that actually turned out to maybe we should thank him, because that turned out to make it that much – I mean, that's what one of the things that made the story so special. So you guys still came back and won that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it added to the story. I really do. And, you know, like I said, we were – you know, as a team, we were going – if I remember correctly, we were going through a little bit of a tough time in terms of results. So I think that that helped us turn things around a little bit. And, you know, just being able to find the character, find it within ourselves to go down to 10 men against Manchester United and hold on. It was great, man. Honestly, it's one of my better memories as a player.
What about any post-game celebrations? I got a chance to talk to Jimmy Nielsen. He said he ran into Sir Alex Ferguson and Sir Bobby Robson at the bar afterwards. Do you remember anything about any post-game?
I believe Jimmy did that, yes. Listen, if you want somebody who's got some stories, you need to ask Jimmy Nielsen, because he has stories and will tell you as many as you want. I think we might have ended up at on the roof at O'Dowd's down there on the plaza. I think that's where we kind of ended up, and you know, the players and the staff, and it was a good night. It wasn't anything too crazy because we obviously had we're still in the middle of the season, but it was a nice little celebration to, you know, at the time, I don't think we fully understood the impact that the game was going to have. But reflecting on it and looking back on it now, it's nice to remember. And the night, the evening at O'Dowd's on the rooftop was nice as well.
Davey, you talk about how that game legitimized really what the Wizards and then Sporting were doing at the time, and then to have that momentum carry into the new stadium and all of the growth in the rebrand. I'm curious, what was your reaction to the rebrand? Because some people to this day are like diehard Wizards, others are total fans. For you, because you'd been with the club for such a long time, how did you react to that new name and new brand?
I mean, I was obviously had been there for the Wizards, like you said, but I was on board for the rebrand. I think it was going to, you know, it felt like it was breathing a new life into the club. And, you know, with the new owners, if they feel like they want to rebrand and start something completely fresh, not forgetting the history of the Wizards, which is obviously so important, but just to kind of re-energize the fan base in the city. And build a new stadium, I didn't have any problem with it. It was exciting to me, and I think it was to all the players. It felt like, because, you know, years prior to that, we were not sure the team, there was a possibility of the team maybe being relocated, right? So it just seemed like a fresh start for everybody. I know the players were excited about it, the staff was excited about it, we were happy, you know, with the new ownership, local ownership group that was going to really move the team forward in some good ways. And you can see what they did. I think everything that they did was right. You know, so that game, and you know what else I think the game did as well? And it's funny, when I watched the game back, I was watching, my wife was there. She wasn't really watching, but every now and then she would watch. I said, this is funny, because that was the first year that we, you know, Peter really put his stamp on in terms of his system and his style of play that season, right? And how we were going to play moving forward. And we kind of, you know, we struggled initially, right? To the point where like, man, is this going to work? Is this not? But, you know, we get a result against a team like that playing that way. And I'm watching the game, I'm like, this is obviously not the same version of what it is today, but it looks exactly the same, not as high of a level because we had only been doing it for 6 months to a year. Now they've been playing that same system style of play for going on the better part of 10 years now, but you could see it in the beginning before it sort of evolved into what it is today.
We've got Davey Arnault with us, and we'll wrap this up here in a second. So did you, have you ever been a jersey exchange guy after games, and did you get a jersey from anybody from Manchester United or any other kind of souvenir that you still have from that day?
Yeah, so I've never been a huge jersey exchange guy because I don't want to, like, I don't know, it's just not me, but there are certain times when I absolutely will do it, obviously with my good friends around the league, and on occasions when you play Manchester United, you have to get a jersey, and I did, and I got Paul Scholes' jersey.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah, I'm super happy about that. I actually came across it. We were going through some stuff, and I came across it. So we have it in a good place next to the David Beckham jersey from the LA Galaxy. So I'll get those framed one day. But that's a super special jersey, that Paul Scholes jersey. So yeah, I got that one. I was very lucky. And actually, I'll tell you a funny story real quick, if we have time, about the David Beckham jersey. So my wife for years has been, you gotta get David Beckham. I said, I'm not asking David Beckham for his jersey. I'm like, I'm not going to. Well, I have to play against him the next time. And like, no, it's not happening. So it was his last year. I was in Montreal and we played against each other. And at the end of the game, she said, this might be the last time you play. You have to ask for his jersey. I said, I'll think about it. So at the end of the game, we tied 1-1. He's doing an interview on the field after the game, and I was as well. So all the players had gone off. So we're both walking off the field at the same time, and he has his shirt off. He loved taking his shirt off after the game. And so he's holding what I think is his jersey in his hand, right, in his hand. So we walk down the tunnel, and we're talking about the game. He's about to go into the locker room, his locker room. And right before he goes, like, I'm going to ask. So I said, hey, you mind if I get that? Pointing to his hand, thinking it's his jersey. It's a towel, like a little white towel. So he thinks that I'm asking him, like, for his sweat towel. I'm like, that did not – he's like, well, I have my jersey. I said, yes, I want your jersey. So I blame my wife for David Beckham thinking that I asked for his sweat towel.
So does he even, like – first of all, a couple things. Does he even pretend to want your jersey back, like, you know, in exchange? Or
in fairness, he did. Super cool. Yeah. He actually – and I didn't even offer my jersey. I didn't take my jersey. I just said, can I have yours? And he said, yeah, let me grab yours. And so he – it was nice of him. I don't think he has it saved, but he made it seem like he wanted my jersey as well.
He's got it framed
right of place.
His Paul Scholes jersey.
Exactly.
We're going to see the Beckhams post, like, a family picture on social media, and, like, in the corner, we're going to spot a Davey Arnault jersey, like, in a shadow box in the background.
Can you imagine? We are living in strange times, so you never know.
Okay, so that's Davey Arnault. I'm going to remind everybody that you can watch this game, Manchester United versus Sporting Kansas City, on SportingKC.com on Thursday night, 7 o'clock, right? So we hope you can watch it, because you're going to want to check it out. That's Davey Arnault. We'll take a break. We'll wrap things up on the Sporting KC show right after this. And we're back to wrap things up on the SKC show here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and wherever you get your podcasts and streaming content. I don't know about you guys. I thoroughly enjoyed that Davey Arnault interview, and the story about asking for David Beckham's sweat towel was saved the best for last. That was my favorite part of the whole interview, guys.
That's great. Davey talked about humanizing Sir Alex Ferguson, and that sweat towel story kind of humanizes a legend in Davey Arnault, right?
Yeah.
I love how much his wife was involved in, like, both of those situations, between the picture and then, you know, her pestering him to get the Beckham jersey. I love that, you know, his wife was or is as big of a fan as some of those guys as, you know, maybe the rest of the soccer world is.
All right. So we'll wrap this up with our weekly goals to Google. I'm curious what you guys have in store for us this week. What do you think?
Sure, I'll go. I've got a goal from another one of my favorite players, Clarence Seedorf, fantastic Dutch magician, part of really great Ajax teams in the early 90s. But he made a move to Real Madrid that didn't really work out for him. Obviously, he became a legend at AC Milan thereafter. But at Real Madrid, he scored from about 40 yards against Atletico Madrid. And you know how special of a game that is between those two rivals. So look up this Clarence Seedorf, Real Madrid versus Atletico Madrid. It's one of those goals that he hits it from so far and it just stays hit. And you're like, that thing is on a rope towards the upper 90. It's incredible.
All right.
Kind of a similar, not totally similar, but just kind of a shot from distance that just kind of was a wow goal. And we all remember Daniel Shalloway's impressive 2018 season with Sporting Kansas City. I want to say my favorite goal and one of the most memorable sporting goals for me was in the game against Atlanta United on the road. Obviously, this is the year that they ended up going on to win the MLS Cup, but at the time, this was a huge game for Sporting on the road. Daniel Shalloway scored that banger from outside the box to, I believe, either put them up 1-0 or tie. I think they ended up winning that one 2-1 or 3-1. I can't remember the final score, but I just remember that goal and it being a huge difference maker in that game. So that was hands down one of my favorites. And again, in a tough environment in Atlanta, and that was just huge goal, huge game, and one of my most memorable sporting goals.
Okay, so I wanted to give a Davey Arnault goal for our goals to Google. I did a little research, and I have two different goals in mind, and neither one of them are with his time in Kansas City, but The first one was a little trivia. Did you guys know that Davey Arnaud scored the first goal ever in Montreal Impact history?
Wow.
So
in MLS.
Yeah, so 2012, go back and watch that one. It's a relatively simple header. You know, I mean, a nice goal and everything. It's not going to be one you're like, oh, that's one of the greatest goals I've ever seen. But how many guys can say they scored the first goal in a franchise's history? And Davey Arnaud did that for the Montreal Impact. The other one, he scored a 40-yarder against the Portland Timbers in Portland for DC United. That was in, I think, 2014. So if you want to take a look at either of those, just a little tip of the cap to Davey Arnaud, because he did a couple things after he left Kansas City as well. So that's my goals, I guess, to Google for this week. So with that being said, guys, we'll wrap this up. Thanks to Davey Arnaud for joining us. Thanks to you for watching, for Carter Augustine, and for Ali Trost. This is Nate Bucati saying thanks, and we will see you again next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.